foot sore to a podcast. It was you guys are going to be quiet for 5 seconds. You cough and I giggle, which I think leads us nicely into what this is going to be. Most podcasts start with an introduction. I could reel off your entire CV of the phenomenal accolades, the results that you've achieved, but I don't want to do that because anyone who knows you already should know all of those things, and anyone who doesn't needs to find out for themselves. So, Shaw, how would you introduce yourself?
Oh, man, how would I introduce myself? I'd probably say I'm like an oxymoron, right? Like, I'm very binary. I'm either in or I'm out. Like, I'm all in or I can't be arsed. I think I've got a you know, pretty decent track record as... You know, I've done some pretty cool things in business. I'm very proud of my MBE. I've won tons of awards, but that's not really what defines me. So for me, my driving force has always been, how can I help as many people as possible fulfill their greatest human potential? And I've chosen business as the path and the mechanism to help people do that, primarily because coming from a similar background to you, single parent family, growing up on a council estate, I didn't have anything. I didn't have any role models. I didn't have anyone to open doors. I didn't have anyone to teach me anything. I had to learn it all from the school of hard knocks and make a shit ton of mistakes along the way. However, entrepreneurship has given me a totally different life to the one that I was born into. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely believe in the power of business to level the playing field. And for me, that has always been my driver.
Love it. My question though, I've listened to you on so many different podcasts. I think your story is, for anyone who knows you, it's really well known. Your accolades, and when you're saying, you know, I think I've done all right, humility at its finest. You've achieved some phenomenal things, and I'll put them all into the show notes. You know, we're talking in recognition for MBE, which is what you started with. And I'm intrigued by that because, you know, first and only female boxing
promoter. Because I feel like when I talk about the other stuff, I feel like I'm just name dropping, right? Like, I know this is this British thing, right? Like, if I was American, which by the way, that's weird because I am American, right? I was born in California. Okay, so if I switch into my California mode, right? Okay, so, you know, I started my career from super humble backgrounds and I had absolutely nothing. Grew up on a council estate with no money. I've done everything by myself. And when I was 21, I was very fortunate to interview Chris Eubank, senior, the super middleweight champion at the time, who then offered me a job. I became the first and only at that time licensed female boxing manager in the world. And actually before that, I got a scholarship to one of the best schools in the country. And I went from some shitty comprehensive that I really couldn't stand to this incredibly privileged lifestyle, which I didn't understand. And I was going to school with girls who were being chauffeur driven to school in Bentleys. And all jokes aside, I think it's actually really important because one or two things happened during that period. One, I saw what was possible.
Yeah.
Because back then I thought, well, if they've got it, why can't I have it? There's nothing that they can do that I can't do. And two, it opened up this whole new world to me because I didn't know anyone who had a BMW, let alone a Bentley. So all of a sudden, I was in this world of the absolutely ultra privileged, the most connected. There were girls in there whose parents were literally running the country. And there was little old me, traveling an hour and a half a day in, an hour and a half a day out, living on a council estate. And when some of the girls found out about my background and, you know, I was the only one who had a Saturday job, the only one, right? I'm not going to lie. Some of them, you know, would make snidey remarks, but for anyone who knows me, I might be small, but I'm really fucking fierce. So don't fucking test me because I ain't the one to back down. So when they made these snidey remarks, I had just a really simple comeback. You're here because your parents can afford it. I'm here on a scholarship because my brains did it for me. And I'm like, you know, like, fuck off and fuck you. And I think I learned to be resilient. I learned that actually there are always going to be people who are better than you at something. There's going to be somebody who's made more money than you. There's going to be somebody who's better at this than you. There's going to be somebody who's more connected. There's always going to be someone, and that's okay. Like, I learned to understand that if you're a shy wallflower, you're going to get looked over. And if you can't start to be proud of who you are, nobody else is going to give you a break. So the first break has to come from you. And I think I learned that from really kind of growing a thick skin and realizing that the validation had to come from me. I had to validate myself first and foremost. And from that point, you can achieve amazing things. And really that is where it started, right? Realizing that you can't look to or wait for external validation or for external things to happen. It has to come from you.
There is so much to unpack there, because we started with the, you know, humble beginnings, humble introduction. But the reality is, if you're not going to big yourself up, who's going to do it for you? You can't be the shy wallflower. But there's tons to unpack in there, because there must have been, you know, even if it was a day one, walking into that school, because the Shah that we know of today, you know, there is very much a shell exterior, a fuck you attitude. If you're not going to help me, I'm not going to help you. And I'm going to do it in spite of you. I am renowned. My figures are always out of kilter, because I used to try and be humble and go, I'm 99% fueled by a desire to succeed and one by pure spite. It's probably 50-50 is the reality.
I hear that.
Anyone who tells you you can't or you shouldn't. But I always want the listeners, because there's going to be people in all different areas of life. Yeah. Those who are going, I want to level up. There's going to be people who are facing that challenge of, you know, the I'm walking into the equivalent of the school. I went to an all girls Catholic high school. Taught by, like, girls are bitches.
Bitchy. Oh my God.
So much, you know, a lot of the people that I surround myself. I've got a core group of friends who are girls, but I've always got on better with males, because I think there's a lot less of the, you know, if they're going to call you a really bad word to your face, they'll do it to your face, and I can work with that. How did, because you've had really challenging times, you know, and we're not going to dig deep into it because there's tons that I want to get out, but, you know, single parent family, in spite of challenging relationships, people who should be there for you not being there for you. How does someone use that to fuel them too? Because if you look at it, if we look at like a sliding doors moment, there could have been a Shah who's gone, right, this is the background, this is the life I've been born into.
Yeah.
This is the route that I'm going to follow because, you know, I've seen abuse of different things, of narcotics, all those different things. Why did you, what makes Shah move to this route? Why did you turn left, not right?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, probably one that I've thought about a lot over my whole life. So for the context of that, I grew up in a really dysfunctional family. My dad was a massive narcotics abuser, violence, domestic violence. I saw all of it. Very fortunately, I have a, you know, really solid matriarchal family with my mom and my nan, who, by the way, is 98 and is currently on holiday in Lanzarote at 98.
I love it.
I have strong genes on the female side, right? So I grew up witnessing things that no kid or adult should ever have to witness. And I'm very conscious that in those situations, statistics will show you that the vast majority of kids will end up following the worst patterns. So if they don't end up being a narcotics abuser themselves, they will end up in an abusive relationship. They will definitely not have self-confidence or self-belief. And actually they will underperform most averages in most societies. So very sadly, being born into a environment like that is almost a certainty for holding you back in life.
How did you then, is there a turning point? Is it one thing? Is it the matriarchal support? Because I definitely want to touch upon mum and nan, because your nan sounds like an absolute legend and I love the relationship that you have. Was that in spite of these, I'm going to be more like them? Was it what developed?
All right. Firstly, I'm definitely not the only one who's been able to do this, right? Yeah, gotcha. So I don't want anyone to think that I have some secret sauce, because there are definitely, but we are the outliers, right? Mm-hmm. We are the odd ones. We are not the example, ones. Right? We are the ones who have fortunately managed to escape what the future held for us. Mm-hmm. So why? I think maybe part of it is DNA. Like maybe if you actually unpacked all the people who've been able to do this, you'll find there is some chromosome, some piece of DNA that is different, right? Mm-hmm. So if resilience was part of your DNA, if it was a chromosome that you could actually pick out, maybe we just have more of it.
Yep.
So I do think that I'm hyper resilient. And I think that I have actively encourage that, develop that over the years.
It's been a choice.
It's actually been a choice. And I think that is part of it. So for me, I actually remember very clearly at 8 years old thinking to myself, never, ever, ever in my life am I going to allow myself to be in this position, right? Because...
Eight.
Yeah, absolutely. I can remember it. I can remember the exact moment. And it was because in that moment, I realized my mum had absolutely no control over anything because she didn't have the financial resources to be able to make decisions for her and her two kids. And this is what happens to the vast majority of women who stay in abusive relationships. So people think, well, why don't you just leave? Like, it's really easy. Like, they can just walk out the door.
It's easy from the outside to be
it's
able
easy
to
from
that.
The outside. But I tell you what, it's a hell of a lot easier when you have your own independent financial resources. Mm-hmm. I would never have to stay in an abusive relationship ever. And I think that, you know, that's something else to unpack because I'm so grateful. I've had such great relationships. I have never, ever had a bad relationship, mm-hmm. ever. I am still really good friends with every guy I've had a long-term relationship with since I was 21. My ex is actually my son's legal guardian should anything happen to me. And I think coming from the background that I came from, I could have easily
Absolutely.
Turned out to be completely anti-male, not trusted any man. And I was adamant that that also wouldn't be my story. So yes, I was going to be independent. Mm. No, I would never let a man control my finances. But equally, I wouldn't turn into an anti-male. I wouldn't not want to buy a house with someone else, but I'm going to damn well make sure that I have my own property and my own money and my own funds. And as a result of that, I think it's given me the confidence to choose really well in relationships because I believe that if you enter into a relationship with a good person and for whatever reason your relationship doesn't work out, because there are many reasons that relationships don't work out, they don't have to be because somebody has done something wrong. You go on separate paths, you take a different journey. There's all kinds of reasons. But fundamentally, if you go into a relationship with a good person, they should still be a good person if the relationship ends. And that's always been my thought process. And maybe that's one of the things I'm proudest of most, because I think that it would have been very easy, given my background, for me to have a very different attitude to men, because actually my dad abandoned me. He physically abused my mom in front of me, which in turn is emotional abuse for the children Absolutely. To witness. I saw nothing but abuse. I saw no love. I saw no role models for a relationship whatsoever of any description. And so I feel actually put all of the material things and the awards and the MBE, I feel like one of my greatest accomplishments is that I have such good long-term relationships and friendships with men and women, right? Loyalty and friendship are absolutely key to me. And actually, I found a lot of men have been really protective and supportive of me in my career and my life. And I don't have that chip on my shoulder.
This is where I want to unpack, because there is so much around, I'm not a psychologist, but the psychology of it. One, you chose to take, you know, turn left instead of right. Statistically speaking, you should have gone this way. And as you say, of course, you're not the first and you won't be the last person, but that takes tenacity and drive and a deep-rooted belief in yourself because you've got no choice. There is very much a shit or bust mentality as well.
Yep, totally.
You know, you'll do whatever it takes to get there. But I'm fascinated by the whole relationship side of it. And when I talk relationships, I don't just mean life partner. I'm talking friendships, business partners. You know, you've created and exited multiple businesses. Yep. The majority have been on those good terms because this is how we start, this is how we'll continue with it.
Absolutely.
And that, and to hear you say, despite all of the accolades, because quite often people look at the surface level, you know, you've done this, you've achieved that. They'll either be scared by it, they'll run to you for it, sometimes for the good or the wrong reasons.
Yep, yep.
But to hear you truly say that, because I always want people to learn. And I think a lot of the time when, and I want listeners to have active, you know, do X, Y, Z and A, B, C. But actually more of this is around the emotional intelligence. This is about you understanding you can do this and taking the time to make a decision. I could do this, but I'm choosing not to. You know, you went full tilt the other way, never drinking, let alone going to narcotics, you know, never, you know, you've full abstinence.
Yep.
but still created that. And I really want to dig deep into the how you create those relationships. To still be friends with ex-partners is, you know, a skill set in itself.
Yeah.
To still be friends with people when you've created businesses together and made a conscious decision, just like in a life partnership, yep. you know, this isn't working, it's not yep. for us, and go in separate ways. So what skill set and mindset is needed to be able to compartmentalize? Because yep. that's what you have to do.
Well, I think before you dig into that, I think the number one thing is to understand what loyalty means. And if you can't understand that, then I could teach you all the things about how to compartmentalize and it won't work. Mm-hmm. So loyalty to somebody is where it doesn't matter what the situation is, your loyalty to them overrides it.
Yeah.
So it's that whole thing like you should praise in public and reprimand in private. So if you've got anything, you know, if you've got issues with anyone, you handle them in private, you don't handle them in public. But for me, loyalty is like, you know, you don't have to put everything on social media, right?
It's a conversation we had earlier
right?
on.
100%. You know, like I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know Rob Moore, who I know that you've known for many years, as long as probably we've known him the same length of time. We're really, really genuinely good friends. And we were out to dinner the other night for his birthday. Just Rob and I. Did we post anything on social media? Nope. Did anybody know we're out there? Well, until now, no. Why? Because we're actually genuine friends, yeah. right? So I'd like to think that one of the things that people value me for is I'm a really fucking great 3 a.m. friend, right? If you have a problem, I am typically, you know, the dial a friend at 3 a.m. because everybody knows I'm going to get up, I'm going to get out, and I'm going to come fix it.
Is that because you didn't have that though? Have you become that? You've become the thing you needed?
I think partly, but also because I feel like I've been so blessed to have those people in my life, right? So at the same time, I know if I called Rob at 3 a.m., he would answer the phone, yeah. he'd get in his car, and he'd come and drive to wherever I was to get me out of whatever situation I was in, yeah. or just to sit and talk to me. And that's loyalty and that's real friendship. And relationships need to be based on the same thing. And it's true for your friendships with yeah. women, and it's true for your friendships with men. And I know you touched on this before about, you know, girls and women can be really bitchy to each other. So I absolutely sign up to Madeleine Albright's "There's a very special place in hell for women who don't support each other," because we have a hard enough fucking time as it is. And there is more than enough room for all of us. So why do we have to make it harder for other women? And we could unpack all of this, society, the patriarchy, you know, we can blame everyone else.
It's an inside job though, isn't it?
It's an inside fucking job. You get to choose whether you're a bitch or not. You get to choose whether you want to pull someone else down to make yourself feel better yeah. or focus on building everybody up around you.
And that's the whole premise of what you're doing. That's the way your masterminds run. You've created, and it's because I think when you come to a clique or a clique, however you want to pronounce it, there's those with the mean girls and the bitching, but then you're trying to kind of
Mate,
full tilt the other
let
way.
Let me tell you, there ain't no mean girls in any of my programs or my masterminds. I wouldn't tolerate it. Yeah. I'd just,
but they'd be hoofed out.
They'd be 100% hoofed out.
How much does that give security for those who are thinking, I've always been surrounded by the mean girls, I need groups of people. And, you know, I'm not a burn your bra feminist, but I do believe that everyone needs their kind of
100%. I think it gives people the safety to feel like they can be vulnerable mm-hmm. and open and honest about what's happening in their business without fear of being judged by yeah. other people in the room, knowing that if anyone was like that, they would be out the same day. Like I simply yeah. won't tolerate it. And so here's the interesting thing, Tony. What happens is when you're so publicly like that, you don't attract those people.
Oh, yeah.
Those people don't come join
my
programs.
You find your people. But I'm fascinated by the how, because you do, you know, you are... I was a HR manager for 12 years. I remember sitting in, you know, going through the icebreakers and if you were an animal, what would you be? And like so much of that was just absolute bullshit. And someone came to me and said, I'd love to tell you what I believe your animal is. And I said, okay, what is it? And she said, you're a hedgehog. You're prickly and you're spiky on the outside, but you are warm, fuzzy on the inside, but we've got to get through that. And only certain people do. Well, you know, when someone says something and it sticks in your
yeah,
head
yeah.
and, you know, it is widely noted that you were referred to by the Telegraph as someone who has steel balls with spikes on. How do you find, that just made me laugh, by the way. How do you find the balance? Because, you know, in certain circumstances, you are, sure, don't fuck with me. Don't even come at me with that. You'll regret it. But in other instances, you are and have to be. Sure, the 3 a.m. friend, the one who's going to say, you know, who supports you in a room when you're not there. How does, from a learning element, because there are people who have massive dichotomies over this, how does someone become that person? How do you not go too full tilt the, I've got an armor, I'm not letting anyone in, or I'm going to let everyone in and I'll realize the bad people, you know, judge your character's huge.
Yeah, because actually both things are true. So the more that you know your boundaries, the more that you know what you're prepared to accept and not accept, the easier it is for you to just be yourself. So I don't tolerate bullshit. But I am actually not confrontational at all. I haven't got the time. I haven't got the time to be confrontational. I've got too much shit to do.
It pisses people off more though, because you've got this exterior. Like, they expect the argument. And when you're like,
I can't be arsed. Like, knock yourself out, babe. You're like, you know, you go do you. Good luck.
That's one of my favourite argument enders is, okay, we'll just have to agree to disagree. People blow up.
Yeah, because they don't know how to handle it. Mine is like,
comes back
okay,
to emotional
babe.
Intelligence.
Right. And, you know, and then the difference is I'm kind of like, you know, I'm like a tigress who's watching her cubs all the time. So that person has to have a big, brave exterior to everyone else.
Actually, I run a 4-day property training the other day. And obviously it was one of those where, like, we genuinely care. I am the person who reads the feedback. I know some people don't, but I read the feedback because, yes, we need recognition. But also, how did you feel by the end of it? How did that make you feel? And, you know, I might not necessarily... I would never sell for the sake of selling. I'll sell because it's going to help you.
Yeah.
And we had all of this lovely feedback. And you're sitting there and I had a lady come up to me. She pulled me to one side and she said, can I have a word? I was like, gosh, can. It's the end of the event. So she's got nothing to gain from this. And she said, I've learned a lot from you in property over the last 4 days, but I've never met anyone with higher emotional intelligence. And I was like, that was my response. But I was like, oh my God. You're like, she saw that I come from a place of service. Yeah. And I think that... they need people in their life who are going to support them, but also it's a level of trust.
So I think I'm more like a lioness who's always on the prowl protecting my cubs. So whilst I'm not confrontational, if somebody brings me the confrontation, depending on how important it is to me, I will either, I can't be asked, or I'm going to kill you. But if you come at my people, I'm just going to kill you, because I think I'm far more protective of my people than I am of myself. Because I'm like, do you know what? The people who mind don't matter. The people who matter don't mind. I care deeply about what the people I care about think about me. I care deeply about how I impact people.
Yeah.
I care deeply.
And that's not the surface level. No. What are people going to think of me? This
not.
Is the...
So what somebody who doesn't know me thinks about me is not my business. It's their business. But if people want to come at my people publicly... They
bring it on.
100. 100.
So I'm conscious of time, but there's something that I absolutely... Oh, we got a little critter coming in the room.
Done.
What? I'm not going to ask you what I think of God's creatures.
Well, I'm not really afraid of spiders or no.
Yeah, but that's the exterior. Yeah, you've got to do that. Yeah. So you've just mentioned your cubs. Obviously, you have your not so little anymore cub.
He's huge.
The question I want to know, and this is from a learning perspective for everyone, because you mentioned, you know, we started by, you were a single parent background. I had and only have one of now my parents, and I'm from the most loving of families, but the youngest of 6 kids, we knew true hardship, you know.
Yeah.
It was challenging times. You have created something phenomenal. So your son does not have to be raised, and it's because I experienced that you won't.
Yes,
so he's been raised in a loving environment. He's been raised in, you know, a very privileged environment.
Incredibly.
How on earth do we, and this is for me too, like, how does that make you feel? And how do we, as first generation of get shit done, create a lifestyle for them, how do you find the balance between this is the life that you've got, and
I'm
will
not
it
gonna
stop
lie.
Him from being a the entrepreneur that you are?
I'm not going to lie, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And I question it all the time. And for multiple reasons, because he didn't choose his life, right?
Just like you didn't choose yours.
Right. So I can't hold it against him that he's had this privileged life, at the same time as wanting him to be able to understand this is not how everybody else lives.
Yeah.
And on top of that, my son is mixed race. He has other challenges that mm-hmm. life is going to present at him mm-hmm. that your average white kid doesn't have. And that is a fact. The fact that he is light-skinned, there's this whole thing around colorism. It's not just, it's not a straightforward conversation. And so you have to understand the nuances of what all of this means. And whilst he's had all these privileges, he also lost his dad when he was 3 and a half. So he's grown up with me as a single parent, not out of choice, but there was no choice. And so for everything that he's had that seems like a privilege, there's many things that he's had that are massive disadvantage.
Absolutely.
And so it's trying to juggle both of those sides for him to understand that everything is possible for you, but make sure you appreciate the privilege that you do have. It's the eternal challenge. And particularly, I'll be honest, when he goes to a phenomenal school, but this school, if you study Spanish and you go on a Spanish trip, well, this school doesn't go to Madrid or Barcelona for 3 days like, you know, a normal school would. No, this school goes to Cuba for 2 weeks. So I don't know anything else that demonstrates in a visual way the difference between how I grew up and how he grew up. He's going on school trips for Spanish to Cuba for 2 weeks, right? and make no mistake, his school is fantastic. It's the best school I've ever come across. I adore the school. And I'm super grateful that he got to go to Cuba for 2 weeks. But 99% of the population will not be able to have those experiences. So you need to appreciate that. You need to understand that. One thing I will give him massive credit for, he doesn't spend money. He's not constantly looking for a pair of Balenciagas like some of his friends. He's not asking for this. He's just not wired that way, right? He's not, those things don't matter to him in the same way. And in fact, like we're going to New York together for 4 days for his 18th birthday. And so we're planning what we're going to do. And it's not really about the shopping for him. I mean, it's the experience. And so the thing, again, coming full circle, that I'm proudest of most with my son is his friendships. I mean, this is a boy.
He's learned from you.
He has had his two best friends since he was 5 years old.
Oh, I love that.
And they've gone to different schools and they've maintained their friendship since they were 5 years old. I'm proud of that. He's a phenomenal friend, right? He's a really, really great friend. And so all of his smartness and his entrepreneurial spirit, all of that is great. But it's actually, he's learned the importance of showing up for people. That's what matters.
Something that he's learned from you. I think even your terminology, because I'm always intrigued by the words that we say, the terminology of what you do shows that you are always going to be there in support, because you didn't say when you were talking about these phenomenal successes that he's had and the privilege that he's had, you didn't say, I lost my partner. You said he lost his dad.
100. As hard as the loss was for me, it was harder for me that my son lost his dad. Because I had such a fucking shit dad that I wish I'd never had. And he had such a great dad. And so for me, that's the hardest thing of all. But he has been very fortunate to have also had some incredibly brilliant, strong role models, male role models in his life. And maybe because I am this weird juxtaposition of being a woman's woman and a man's woman all at the same time, I have a lot of male friends and I tend to attract the type of guys in my social circles, in my masterminds that would call themselves, and I would definitely call them alpha males, right? Yeah. They're the strong guys. They're the ones who are decisive. They're the ones who look out for other people. Because by the way, being alpha is a positive thing. All this, we could do a whole podcast and all this bullshit around why it's wrong to be an alpha. That's round two. And so he has been fortunate.
Was that a conscious decision though for you to have? Because you said you never had role models. You started the podcast.
Absolutely.
Entrepreneurial, emotionally intelligent, supportive.
Absolutely. It was a hugely conscious decision. And again, just coming full circle, I think the biggest example of that was last Christmas, not the one just gone, but the one before, when Chris Eubank Senior, who I used to work with, who I started working with when I was 21, everything came full circle. Mm. And he came here and stayed with me for 2 weeks over Christmas. And our friendship over all of that period of time That's what's important to me. It's important to me that I'm a safe space for people. It's important to me that loyalty is my number one value. It's important to me that I give back, because the truth is, Eubank gave me my first break. I will never, ever forget that. And it made me feel so proud that he would come
to you.
Yeah, 100%. And my son learned that. And I mean, there were some crazy moments when they're talking Socrates in the hallway. And I'm like, I am living in a parallel universe right now.
So you
now.
Do have those moments where you look and go, look at what we've done, look at what we've created, look at that. Like, well, it's that, the most random
that
things.
Was, yes. So my son was there with his Marcus Aurelius book and the meditations, and him and Chris were discussing the pros and cons of Stoicism. And I was like, this is batshit crazy. Yes.
I absolutely love it. I could talk all day to you. I'm conscious of your time, but I do have one final question.
Go ahead.
What is the one question no one ever asks that you'd love to answer?
What is the one question that no one asks?
Like, what's the question that you want to answer, but no one ever asks?
Do you know what? I don't even think there is one. I know that's a lame answer because I feel like I'm quite an open book. But if there was one, I think it would be not a question for me.
Or a subject matter even.
Yeah, so I think it's more for the person listening. I think that it's so easy to watch videos and listen to podcasts, and subconsciously we think, oh, it's okay for them.
Yeah.
They've got some magic sauce. They've got something that I don't have. They're lucky. So here's the question that I wish somebody would ask me. About luck, right? Do you think you've been lucky? No, I don't think I've been lucky. I think I have actually been unluckier than the vast majority of people on this planet with the things that I've experienced, the things that I've lost, the people that I've lost, the things that I've been through. But that's not really the point. Let me tell you what happens when we make an assumption that somebody has got what they've got because they're lucky. Mm-hmm. Number one, we take away from all of their hard work, of all of the times where the reason why it might seem like luck is because they were putting themselves in front of those opportunities all day long. And because they had prepared themselves to the extent that when an opportunity came past, they were ready. They were ready to grab it with both hands and run with it. They weren't sleeping on the job. They weren't waiting for a handout. They were waiting to see the opportunity and grab it and run with it. Luck is where they say opportunity meets preparation. And I 100% agree with that. But here's the biggest reason why you never, ever, ever, ever want to call someone lucky is because you are disempowering yourself. Because by saying that, oh, Tony's only there because she's lucky, you are telling yourself subconsciously that it's not possible for you because it's not in your control, because you're not lucky. So when you tell someone else, or when you think, oh, they're just lucky, just think what you're doing to yourself. You are disempowering yourself. You are telling yourself that it is not possible for you because this is about luck, which is total and utter bullshit. It is possible for you. It is possible for me. And it sure as hell ain't luck.
What a way to end the podcast. Shah, thank you so much for your time. We could do this all day long, and I'm definitely coming back for round two if you let me.
Let's do it.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.